Support for today's show comes from Deloitte. What does the future look like? By melding business acumen and innovative technology, Deloitte can help you build the future only you can imagine. They can help engineer solutions for your business reality today and your vision for tomorrow, to get you to a world where you don't just dream it, you build it. See how you can engineer advantage with Deloitte at deloitte.com/us/engineeringadvantage.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Hello and welcome to Decoder. I'm Neil I. Patel, editor-in-chief of The Verge, and Decoder is my show about big ideas and other problems. Today's episode is a little different. I'm talking to Michael Chobanian, the president of the Blockchain Association of Ukraine. The terrible, unprovoked war in Ukraine has destabilized that country's economy and banking system, leading both Ukrainian politicians and citizens to more seriously consider cryptocurrency. Now, as Decoder listeners know, I am pretty skeptical of crypto, but I want to come by that skepticism honestly, and I really wanted to understand more about what was happening with cryptocurrency in Ukraine. In addition to being the president of the Blockchain Association of Ukraine, Michael is also the founder of the Kuna Exchange, which lets people buy cryptocurrencies and swap between them. Earlier this year, the Ukrainian government set up wallets on Kuna and other exchanges to accept donations to the war effort in crypto. In April, Bloomberg reported that the Ukrainian government had received over $60 million in crypto donations. What's more, earlier this year, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky also signed a virtual assets bill into law, which will recognize cryptocurrency as an asset in Ukraine when the war is over. As president of the Blockchain Association, Michael lobbied for this law, which you'll hear him talk about, especially in the context of how little faith he has in the Ukrainian banking system. He says several times that even before the war, the banking system couldn't be trusted, and that for large transactions, people were already using a combination of crypto and dollars instead of Ukraine's actual currency, which is called the hryvnia. Now that's interesting, because throughout the course of this conversation, you'll hear dollars come up a lot. Michael says the most popular cryptocurrency in Ukraine is Tether, or USDT. That's a stable coin that's backed by the US dollar in what's supposed to be a one-to-one ratio. $1 per Tether coin. Now, there are lots of questions about how stable coins really are. Right now, a stable coin called Terra is currently crashing in value, and there's a lot of controversy about whether Tether has the financial reserves to back up its stablecoin. You'll hear Michael express his reservations about USDT, but what I came back to several times is my main question about cryptocurrency, which is whether people only care about it because they care about dollars. We went back and forth on that. It's a good conversation. Now, we've done previous episodes of Decoder on Bitcoin and stablecoins if you want to know more. And of course, Verge reporter Liz Lopato has done a ton of reporting on what she calls weird internet money, especially the recent stablecoin crash. We'll have links to all of that in the show notes if you want to learn more. Okay, Michael Chobanian, here we go. Michael Chobanian, you are the founder of the Kuna Exchange. You are also the president of the Blockchain Association of Ukraine. Welcome to Decoder.
Hey, guys.
I'm very appreciative that you've made the time to come be on the show. I know things in Ukraine are quite tense and quite complex, but I think it's important to talk about what you have been doing there. So you graduated from Columbia here in the United States. You lived in London. You worked in tech in Ukraine. We mostly talk to Americans and American companies on the show. Can you just give me a brief description? What were you working on in Ukraine in the tech industry, and how did you make the move into crypto?
Yeah, I was working in the telecom company. I was in charge of business development, like a CBDO, now it's called. We were the first company to launch 3G in Ukraine. It was based on CDMA standard, right? That's like American standard, and the Europe is all GSM. So anyway, at that time, we launched the first 3G in Ukraine, and that was quite amazing. And a couple of months later, I saw that the mobile traffic is growing really fast, and I had data to the fiber optic, the fixed line internet, and I saw that the traffic is not going as fast. So for me, it was quite obvious that everything is going to go mobile, especially after the iPhone was released. So that's when I was starting to get interested in everything mobile. So using mobile as the universal key to the digital world, let's call it that way. Then I went to Columbia London Business School and Hong Kong University to do my executive MBA degree. And during that time, I was socializing with a lot of people, a lot of diversity was there from different countries, nations. One of the guys said, well, what's happening with the digital marketing in your country? And I said, it's booming. And he asked me a valid question. So are you in it? And I said, no. And he said, why? And I couldn't answer that question, you know, why? So I asked myself, why am I not doing it? If considering that I have a telecom background, I see the traffic is growing. So it's quite obvious that the mobile is going to take over the world. So that's what I did. Yeah, I started my own digital marketing and web studio. So basically, we were doing like simple stuff, creating pages for the companies, creating websites, mobile apps, all that stuff. And at the time when I actually found out about the Bitcoin, one of the projects we were developing was about the digital banks. At the time, they didn't exist in Ukraine. And there were only a few examples in the world. So we were doing the marketing research on what's happening with the money in the world. And that was 2011. And that was the time when I was first introduced to Bitcoin. So it was like the global financial system with a lot of banks, with the electronic money, a lot of institutions. And that was like a small Bitcoin, like that couldn't fit into any of the bubbles that we drew. I asked my guys, what the hell is Bitcoin? And they said, this is a digital currency, fully decentralized. It has nothing to do to the fiat system. And I'm like, what's the fiat system? You know, that, you know, like car system. So all these typical questions that all of us know now. To be honest, I didn't believe in Bitcoin in 2011. It was, as I can remember now, it was dropping to from $30 to $3. I didn't quite spend that much time on studying what's a Bitcoin. The next time I shook hands with a Bitcoin was in 2013 when the April banking system happened. And a lot of investors, as it turned out to be later, tried to save their money from the government and they were buying Bitcoin. And I'm like, whoa, so you can use Bitcoin to avoid government sanctions. And I'm like, this could be interesting. So that's the minute when I starting doing Bitcoin, you know, full time. I don't do anything else apart from that. So April 2013, which means it's exactly 10 years and 1 month. Interesting.
And how things have changed in 10 years and 1 month.
Oh, yeah.
So I want to talk to you about what is happening with blockchain in Ukraine now, where obviously the entire country is under stress. Russia's launched this war. The country's fighting back. It seems to be going well. Right. There's a lot of destabilization. You can see why Bitcoin would be interesting in that context right now. So I want to talk about that. But before we do that, just help me understand the foundation. Before the war, what was the tech industry in Ukraine like? What was the status of Bitcoin or cryptocurrency adoption in Ukraine like before the war?
In terms of number of crypto users per capita, according to a lot of researchers, Ukraine was always, if not the first, definitely among the top five. The reason for that is we have fantastic internet penetration. The average speeds are like getting closer to 1 gigabit. That's average for the whole country. Then a lot of mobile phones and really bad banking system, like the shittiest banking system you can ever imagine. So you can't do anything. Like literally, they don't. If you want to do a service, they say, no, you can't do that. And why? Because the National Bank said no. Obviously, in this kind of situations, a lot of countries are in similar situations, especially developing ones, where the banking system is so bad, you cannot like send money abroad, you cannot take out money, you cannot put money into the bank. if something starts to get, you know, happen in the economy, the government decides that your money is now government money, you know, so they did it a few times. So we don't trust the banking system. We don't trust the government. We don't trust anyone. And now we have like a system which doesn't require you to trust any particular person. It belongs to everyone and to no one at the same time. It's fully decentralized, and with a lot of different cryptos, you can go like 100% decentralized, or you can go like fully centralized, and you can choose. You want a smart contract, or you just want to make sure that everything is good with your Bitcoin. So it's an amazing system. And that's why the per capita usage in Ukraine is huge. That was before the war. And now after the war, during the war, I'm thinking like it's already finished. But anyway, yeah.
It would be nice if it was.
It will be soon. Yeah, no, I see the trend as well. And it's just a matter of time. So just like with the fiat system, they're going to lose. The Putin is going to lose as well. So
that's a bold prediction. I just want to point that out, that you've now predicted the war will end and the fiat currency system will end.
We're going to have to fight with the banking system. But the world is going to change so much that the traditional fiat system has no chance. Anyway, so what was it talking about?
Talking about Ukraine before the war. So you talked about the status of cryptocurrency before the war. You said the uptake was high because the banking system was bad.
The status was none, and it still is. We have a law, but it's going to go into action at least maybe next year, and no one knows when exactly because of war. The ministries are like worried about winning the war, not like drafting or implementing the law. So at the moment, the crypto is nothing. It doesn't exist. But it didn't stop us because, as I told you, we don't trust the government, so we don't really need any government official saying that Bitcoin is something, or we don't need any documents that will prove that Bitcoin is something. So we just use it. It exists, and we use it, and we don't care about the government.
So let me ask you, let me just put two things in the contrast here, which I think is interesting. You mentioned that you worked at the telecom provider. As far as I understand, Ukraine only really has one telecom provider, but that telecom provider was really fast to 3G, and then on top of it, has delivered very fast internet to most people, right? The median speed for internet in the United States is not a gig. It's barely 200. Decoder listeners know I would complain about United States telcos all day and all night. But in one sense, it seems like the government's doing a very good job of delivering internet access in Ukraine for whatever reason. And I'm curious for your insight there.
It's not the government. That's the whole point. Government doesn't have a single successful project in Ukraine. One project. We have the project which is called DIA. This is an app which enables you to have your online passport for the international travel, for like local travel. You have like your car driver license. You have the documents for your car. It's all in that app. And that app equals to the physical document. And this project was only launched in 2019. So we're the first country with a digital passport, which is equal to the paper passport. I think that's the only successful project that we have in Ukraine. The rest of the government projects, you know, just fail. They just steal the money and that's it. So when I say that internet, it's not because the government did something. It's just because the government didn't do anything. Same with the crypto. If they don't make problems, then the industry develops. If government comes, that's it. This industry is dead.
Right. By the way, I want to correct myself there. There was a single telecom provider in it. It demonopolized itself, and now there's more competition in Ukraine for internet.
That was a long time ago, and it was slightly different from what you're saying, but it doesn't matter. It was not the government provider. So basically what you could do back like 15 years ago, if you want to set up telecom operator, all you need is to buy some Cisco's, buy a fiber optic cable to your Cisco server, and then basically what you had to do is just do the wiring to all these apartments around you. So you could like choose a couple of blocks and you basically just, you know, take the Ethernet wire and you drill the holes in the walls and so on, and you bring it to the houses. And that's how you connected your subscribers to the internet. And that's it. You have an internet provider. You didn't have to ask anyone to do that. Now it's basically changed. Now it's more civilized, so you have to get permission to dig and so on. But anyway, at that time, before the government came, a lot of wire was already in the houses. So that's why it's really cheap. It's all gigabit is already there. So And there is no monopoly on the internet in Ukraine as well. So there is no Verizon, there is no AT&T. So if you want to be internet provided, just get your own fiber optics from Europe and here we go. You can do, you know, sell in wholesale.
Yeah.
Same in the crypto. So there is no government to ask to do something. That's why it's so popular.
Yeah. I want to make that comparison because, right, these are two big infrastructure projects that, depending on what country you're in, like the relationship of the government to infrastructure like broadband, the relationship of the government to infrastructure like money, very different. And you have experience in both. So it's interesting to draw the contrast to successful internet deployment, perhaps successful crypto deployment. And then just broadly, before we get into crypto in this moment in Ukraine, what was the tech industry in Ukraine like before this?
Booming as well. We have a lot of bright people, very educated. So like the higher education level in Ukraine is 96% or some other. So we have a lot of educated people. We have a lot of tech people. So we have quite a few strong universities, like IT universities. That's why we have a lot of IT personnel. In general, you know, people here are more mathematically inclined. So that's why we have a combination of really fast internet, a lot of clever developers, IT developers, and crypto. So it was booming. You know, we did, you know, billions and billions per day in transactions for the whole country, because like even huge markets worked 100% on crypto. So it was big.
We need to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll talk about how cryptocurrency was being used in Ukraine before the war, and as Michael sees it, its benefits now.
Support for Decoder comes from Squarespace. Squarespace is an all-in-one platform you can use to build a website and help people find your ventures. Whether you're seeking a location for your podcast, teaching language classes, or selling handcrafted ceramics, Squarespace has all the tools you need to create a home on the web. You can create a polished, professional place that connects people with whatever it is you're excited about. Squarespace also supports all forms of connecting with those people, whether you're selling products online or in person or offering memberships. You can make your website look exactly how you want it. They even have tools to help you create a custom logo. And they make it easy to create a place for people to schedule an appointment with you, browse your services, or learn more about why you do what you do. Visit squarespace.com/decoder for a free trial. When you're ready to launch, use offer code DECODER to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Support for this podcast comes from Hims. It can be challenging for men to speak about their health, and whether that's a fear of being vulnerable or just wanting to keep things private, there are just some things we would just rather keep to ourselves. Hims knows how you feel, which is why they're looking to provide you the help you need discreetly. Hims is a men's healthcare brand looking to provide simple and convenient access to science-backed treatments for men. The entire process is 100% online, so you can get a new routine of improving your overall health in private. If prescribed, your medication ships directly to you for free and in discreet packaging. No waiting rooms and no pharmacy visits. So while it can be tough to deal with this part of your life, it doesn't mean you have to do it alone. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/decoder. That's hims.com/decoder for your personalized treatment options. hims.com/decoder. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See hims.com/decoder for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan.
We're back. I just wanted to give people that foundation before our break. As you said, you have an educated population with fast internet. They're already interested in using crypto. Then the war happens.
Yep.
Tell me what has happened with crypto in Ukraine since the war began.
So obviously the volumes are down probably 3 to 4 times. The reason for that is before the war, most of the gray market, and gray market in Ukraine is probably 60% of GDP, was using crypto as the core banking system. You couldn't use traditional banks if you're in the gray market. Not that many people actually use banking, you know, for business because it's useless. You can't buy US dollars, you can't easily send SWIFT and so on. With crypto, no one asks you a question. If you want to do it, you just do it. So therefore, a lot of businesses worked on crypto. And now since the war, these huge markets, they're closed. Some of them are destroyed, so therefore there is no import, there is no demand for crypto. That's why it has fallen. And the second reason, people don't really speculate right now because most of the crypto, I don't want to call them investors, crypto holders, they came in the past year. And obviously, these are not the richest people in the world. So when the war happened, the last thing they were thinking it was crypto. So they wanted to buy some food for their families. They needed the new shelter because most of the city, Kharkiv, like big cities, had to flee to the other countries or western part of Ukraine. The relocation means you have to spend more money. So basically, yeah, the speculation volume is probably 10 times down from the pre-war time.
So as you're looking at the Bitcoin market now, you're obviously seeing the prices fall. The rest of the crypto market is, I would say, chaos at this moment in time. And then you take out speculation and you take out gray market transactions. What is Bitcoin being used for in Ukraine right now?
Two major use cases. First one is humanitarian aid. So the funds like mine, we use crypto to pay for goods in Europe or in US.
Can we just be specific here? You said crypto. Are you saying crypto inclusive of Bitcoin and Ethereum? Are you saying inclusive of more cryptocurrencies? Or
Like three main currencies that we use in the fund. It's a Bitcoin, Ether, and USDT on Tron Network.
Okay.
These are the two currencies and one token. These three are used to pay for like bulletproof vests, for example. The reason that people are using like the funds, the volunteers, the regular people, they're using crypto for the very simple reason. There is no other way that you could pay for something outside of Ukraine because the foreign exchange market is closed to very specific companies. So if you're like not in the petrol and business or in the food or in whatever the government is requiring at the moment, you won't be able to buy US dollars. So if you can't buy US dollars, obviously you can't import anything. So the only other solution to buy something outside of Ukraine is only using crypto. So that's the first use case. We use it as international payment, means of international payment. The second use case is savings. A lot of people converted cash money into crypto. It's much safer. It's easier to carry. You know, you can take your phone or ledger or written down mnemonic phrase with you. It doesn't weigh anything. And cash, you know, weighs a lot of kilos and it can be easily taken away from you by the bad guys. So, yeah, savings. Two major use cases.
So if the war started in late February and you said, oh my gosh, I got to put my revenue into Bitcoin, your savings would have plummeted precipitously from now until then. Do you think it's a good savings vehicle?
Shit happens, but it's much better than, well, first of all, the way the people do in Ukraine savings is not when they carry money to the bank and they put it in the deposit in the bank. No, it doesn't work like that. We don't trust the banks, I told you. So if I have a lot of money, by a lot of money for Ukraine, I mean probably $100,000 and above. So if you have that kind of money, the last thing you will think about is actually bringing it to the bank. Because once you bring it to the bank, that's it. The likelihood that you're going to get them back is very slim. They'll find a way why to tell you you cannot take them out. You could sell them to Grivna, and then they will give you Grivna. But again, you cannot take out this whole amount because they can ask you 50,000 questions. What are you going to use the cash for? Then they'll find the law saying that you cannot take out the you know, certain amount of cash, blah, blah, blah. So people don't bring it to the bank, but people store in cash US dollars, because it cannot be easily taken away by the government. Or they store in crypto, or they used to buy houses or apartments in big cities, which was a big, big mistake. These are the only three options. So we don't have a stock market, so you cannot buy stocks. So the only option is cash, like you physically store cash, but it devalues because of inflation. You have crypto, and the third option is square meters. So from this point of view, even if you bought the Bitcoin or Ether like 2 months ago, nearly 3 months ago, you probably lost, you know, half or maybe 30% of that value, but you haven't lost everything. And there is a very good chance that this might go up just mathematically because Bitcoin is limited in supply. So that's much better scenario than owing square meters in Kiev or in Kharkiv or in Mariupol, because that doesn't cost anything. So my house, I have a house outside of Kiev. It doesn't cost anything. There is no demand. Zero. Zero. It doesn't matter what the price
is.
No one wants to buy it.
Yeah.
You know, you can imagine that what happened to the savings of the people who spend it all on the apartments. Same in China, you know, it's a bad solution. Crypto only.
Okay. So you said there are three use cases. We talked about two. What's the third?
The third, probably transfers within the country. So, for example, if you want, as I said, you have cash in one city and you want to take out cash in another city, instead of driving and being at risk, you could use crypto. So you buy crypto in one city and then you arrive to the other city and you sell crypto for cash and here we go. You know, it will cost you 0.3 to 0.5% depending on the cities. That's it. You use crypto just to transfer cash from one point to another.
And is that mostly happening in Bitcoin or Ethereum or USDT?
USDT. People trust USDT, unfortunately, here. I can understand why. I mean, for this use case, yeah, but I would prefer DAI from MakerDAO. I don't trust the USDT as a token or the company Tether. You know, I have a lot of questions. But yeah, anyway, it's the most popular stablecoin here.
So I would just say broadly in the market, right, we're watching stablecoins experience a great amount of struggle. Terra and Luna are in what appear to be a death spiral. Are you seeing that for USDT in Ukraine as well, that is a real risk?
I see not in Ukraine. USDT is global, so I see a risk for the whole Tether.
How do you think that risk is expressed?
The risk that they just printed a lot of Tether, which is not backed by anything. There is a risk that if that's true, that then it's a big problem. The second question is reputation. Media, you know, shows Tether as like an evil corporation, which is grayish. So it's not as valid as, for example, USDC by Coinbase and Circle. So these two companies are public, they're like regulated, and Tether is like, you know, the big, but it's from someone who was in trouble beforehand. So I think there could be problems in the future. Hopefully not, but.
So the third use case there, to me, is kind of the most interesting place to start, which is transfer within the country. You're describing a country where even before the war, the banking system was not trusted, perhaps not useful. You want to buy goods and services in Ukraine. Maybe this is the push where a cryptocurrency actually becomes the currency of a country. We haven't really seen that happen before. But what you're describing is people move their money into USDT, they travel, and then they sell their USDT for dollars, and then they transact in dollars. Are people actually transacting directly in cryptocurrency there yet?
Oh, yeah. The house I mentioned, I bought for USDT.
The owner of the house was happy and willing to take USDT. But USDT is a stand-in for dollars.
Yeah, and in Ukraine.
Right, I mean, you might as well have transferred dollars, right, with some proxy.
How are you going to transfer dollars? I mean, in that case, I would need to get a big bag, put a lot of cash in it, which I don't have because I don't store in cash, then take that back, take a risk that someone could stop me and, you know, take away this cash from me or shoot me or something else. But what's the point if you can just, you know, press a few clicks, you convert either to USDT and then that send that USDT directly from Uniswap or from my exchange. That's it. So it's much easier, it's fast, it's secure. I have a proof on the blockchain that I did this transaction, which is also important for Ukraine, because I told you we don't trust the government, so we don't trust the representative of a government like solicitors or anyone else. So yeah, crypto is there already.
Are people buying groceries in any of the cryptocurrencies? Are they buying gas? How is that working?
No. So the crypto is used mainly for transactions above, I'll say, $1,000 to $5,000. If you're spending below that, you have local currency, which is really good example of gazelle money. There is a term, gazelle money.
I don't know this term,
but it's basically the money that devalues really quickly. There is incentive for you to spend it as fast as possible. So if you use that, system, then theoretically the economy will grow because people would be spending all the time. So they have no incentive to save this currency. They have incentive to spend. So this is a good example or explanation of Ukrainian hryvnia. It's devaluing by 20, 30, maybe 15, 10%, like the minimum is 10 per year. That's by official statistic. But I told you before, we don't trust the government. So I guess the real inflation is probably close to 20%. That's why I see if you compare prices year to year of your, you know, typical grocery store purchases. So yeah, it's closer to 20%. So what's the point of hodling in local currency if you guarantee that inflation is going to eat it? And then the exchange rate is 1 to 27, it was before the war. So for you, if you want to store like, I don't know, $100,000, that's like 2.7 million hryvnias. And if you're lucky, you got the 500 notes. Which means the bag will weigh approximately 30 kilos. Do you really want to, you know, carry around 30 kilos of paper? No. So I have to explain this because in US, you know, like you don't have these problems.
Don't. No, this is eye-opening.
Yeah, exactly. So the banking, I used to live in US. So the banking system there worked perfectly. You know, if you're inside the banking system, you're okay. As long as you don't leave the system, you can send any amount to any other person or a company. The bank is not going to ask you questions if you have like the valid money and it's in their system. If you want to use crypto, you can easily use crypto in US. You can pay for a lot of stuff with the crypto. But Ukraine is different. So if you're buying something above $500, you will be thinking in US dollars prices in terms of US dollars. But if it's, for example, a milk, or a loaf of bread, or I don't know what else could be cheap, you know, like typical goods that you buy every day. You're thinking in the local currencies. But once you pass the threshold of approximately $500, you start to think US dollars. So if you want to buy a car, you're thinking in dollars. If you want to buy a house, you're thinking in dollars. You want to buy an iPhone or any phone. If it's more or less expensive phone, it will be in dollars. If it's a cheap phone, it will be in hryvnias. So, it's a different story. So for us, USDT is basically a bank account in US dollars without the government control, because you cannot open the US dollars account and easily transfer US dollars from one account to another account. It's impossible. You cannot do it because the banking system is shit.
I believe you. I just want to push on that a little harder because it's fascinating to me. Just conceptually, there are two currencies in Ukraine, and I keep mashing up the pronunciation of the Ukrainian local currency. In English, I think it's hryvnia.
Hryvnia is good, yeah. Hryvnia is very good, yeah.
Hryvnia, so...
Yeah, so we have two currencies, yeah.
So you've got two currencies that are kind of open, running at once. We've got hryvnia on the small side, and most importantly, dollars on the high side. And then the crypto, where crypto comes in, as you're describing it, is USDT is a proxy for dollars that is easily transacted digitally without the government getting in your way. And you don't need a bank SQL server to tell you how many dollars you have, which is, right, with my bank, that's effectively what's happening. They have a database, and I trust the database. To whatever extent I might trust the United States government has backstopped the bank's database, so I think my money is safe. You're saying, okay, but USDT is on the blockchain. Anybody can read it. I don't need to trust anybody else. But at the end of the day, it's still dollars.
Yeah.
It's not Bitcoin.
Well, first of all, you have to distinguish between the money used for regular transactions and savings. If you want to save, you definitely don't keep the USDT. You invest it into any cryptocurrency, like real cryptocurrency, because there is no point of holding on to USDT because the dollar has inflation. So you're actually losing every year. With the crypto, and especially if you're doing your investment plan for like 3+ years, you're most likely to win. That's what history tells us. So again, so if you want to do transactions, you use USDT. If you want to do investment or savings, then you use Bitcoin and Ether or any other crypto. I would suggest Bitcoin and Ether. But that's not investment advice.
Fair enough. The reason I'm pushing on this is because it seems like the war in Ukraine, I mean, it's an enormous humanitarian crisis. It's a tragedy. I think we all wish it had not happened. But it is also a point at which you might see acceleration of trends, right? You might see acceleration of crypto usage in transactions or in savings or, right? You don't trust the government or the banks already. Now they kind of don't even exist. So you might see this rapid acceleration in usage. What you're describing, though, is usage has actually gone down and reliance on the stablecoin pegged to the dollar is actually kind of the important piece of the puzzle. And I, just like in the whole conversation on blockchain and cryptocurrencies, you started off by saying fiat currency would go away. Having this moment put pressure on the system such that reliance on the dollar goes up does not seem like a step on the path towards, and then fiat currency will go away. It seems like the opposite step to me.
Well, first of all, we have to look at the timescales. So for the fiat system and for everything that you just said, there are like different timescales. So it's not going to happen once.
Okay.
It will be a general degradation of a fiat system. Equally, at the same time, the role of crypto would be growing. Like crypto, not stable coins. So yeah, I don't see a contradiction here, to be honest. I mean, for me, it's quite logical that the one fades, another one rises, and it happens pretty much at the same time, like it happened in Ukraine. So if you can't use the fiat system to buy goods outside of Ukraine, there was a vacuum, and that vacuum was filled with crypto. What's unique with Ukraine is we are the first country in the world where a lot of high-ranking officials are pro-crypto now. Mm-hmm. So we have an army which is highly supportive of crypto because our fund, the crypto fund that is buying all kind of humanitarian or defensive stuff for the government, you know, we are more efficient than any of the official government military suppliers because, you know, for us, it takes 10 minutes to confirm the block on the Bitcoin and we need three. So it's 30 minutes to do a transaction in Bitcoin and it's done, it's paid. For government, they need about a week just to send the money. Because they are so bureaucratic, they need like the wet stamp legal papers. And, you know, it has to be sent back and forth. Then it takes a week for the SWIFT to reach US because the banking system, as I told you before, is shit. For them, it's really slow. With the crypto fund, we can buy anything like within days, it will be delivered to Ukraine. Not weeks and not months, like with the fiat system. So now we have supporters of crypto from the all the military, from the police, from the special services, from the court, from, well, basically all the government, like the prime minister, everyone. They know about this fund and how good we do. So everyone now knows that crypto is actually life-saving and it's really efficient and it's fast and it's convenient and so on and so on. So it's a unique situation because before the war, there was a lot of skepticism among the top-ranking officials in the government. Now they all know about the Bitcoin and they know that it can actually save lives and it can cross the border and it can overcome any obstacles that the National Bank, which is independent in Ukraine, unfortunately, could do. And so now we have a lot of support. So after the war, I think we'll be just number one crypto country in the world.
We need to take another break, but when we come back, Michael makes the case for turning the government of Ukraine into a DAO, or a decentralized autonomous organization. Stick around.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity, but giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else. and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it hits the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
We're back with Michael Chabanian. One of the things that you have talked about on other podcasts and interviews you've done is preventing people from using rubles to buy into your exchanges or other exchanges. You've criticized other exchanges for allowing transactions in rubles. Obviously, that is a proxy towards letting the Russian people transact. Explain your criticism of allowing ruble transactions. And then I kind of want to unpack how you can run a totally decentralized thing and then impose rules like no rubles. But first, explain your criticism of it.
So it's the currency of the enemy. So if you continue using the currency of the enemy, you're helping the enemy because that ruble is used for some kind of economic activity. And if there is economic activity, there is a benefit to the economy. If there is benefit for the economy, they can, you know, build more tanks and send them to Ukraine and try to kill more people in my country. If we as the world decided that we impose sanctions on the economy of the country, obviously the ruble should be shut down. And there is definitely not a single exchange should use this currency for the moment. Well, at least until the Putin and his regime is in power and they're doing the war against my country. So that's the main idea.
But if you are a crypto exchange and people use the rubles to buy Bitcoin, you think that that should be not allowed?
Shit happens. It's their government that is sending troops to kill my people. And some of the people who were using my exchange, they thought that, you know, nothing bad is happening in my country. Like the troops is normal and the killing children is also normal. So, I mean, I'm against any violence. I'm a libertarian, so I'm against violence. And I think only economic means are the means that we should use to fight against the disinformation within Russia. And I think it works.
Unpack that a little bit. What do you mean by using economic means to fight against disinformation in Russia?
Like economic sanctions. So they are cut off from all the civilized services. So you cannot use Amazon. You cannot use Netflix, Google, Spotify, McDonald's, cars, electronics, Samsung. I know all the big brands of the world. They said, no, you cannot use our services. We don't want to be, you know, part of the bloody regime. So obviously the people who watch TV and they think that this is special operation for the benefit of Russia, obviously most of them will wake up when they realize they can no longer watch Netflix. No one wants to see them in their countries. No one wants to work with them. So obviously they're going to ask questions, what the hell is going on? Maybe something is wrong with Russia, not the rest of the world. I'm against any sanctions. Even I was against the ruble, but it's a general trend, and if we agree that we try to fight Russia with economic means, then okay, we fight with economic means. It was painful to my budget as well, so we immediately cut off about 40% of our revenues. But fuck that, at least I'll save the country, you know.
Yeah, I agree with you. You seem very idealistic when you talk about cryptocurrency and blockchains. One of the core pieces of the idealism, right, is it is decentralized. No one can say no, right? That's even how you began talking about it. No one can get in your way. You can just do the things you want to do. And so in a moment like this, when I want you to stop paying for Netflix, I want you to stop paying for Bitcoin. Like, you do need some element of centralized or quasi-centralized decision makers to make that decision and inflict that economic consequence. Otherwise, nothing changes. So how do you put those two things together? That, you know, cryptocurrency is decentralized. It works in Ukraine because we don't trust the banks or the government, however much you might trust the banks or the government. But on the flip side, you need to trust me enough to say, you're not going to get to transact in rubles on Kuna Exchange, which I run.
Well, listen, behind the ruble thing, let's finish with that. If every single exchange would cut off ruble, and pretty much everyone now cut off ruble, it means that ruble, the digital ruble, let's call it that way, the banking system ruble, it could be no longer used to buy crypto. The only other way for them to buy crypto is actually exit the ruble zone or US dollar zone. So if they had savings within Russia, they'll just spend it all on crypto and stop supporting the ruble. So, you know, there is some logic there. With regards to global sanctions and, you know, what's happening in the world, you know, it's not an easy topic for discussion because it has so many layers. And the higher you look, the more complicated it gets. Obviously, we're going to have to change. And but I can give you a good example. Okay, I'll give you a good example. So I have a friend in Russia, and he has quite a large business. The reason he's still not saying much about the war, and he's not calling publicly the war a war, because you have to call it special military operation for some reason, well, for the Russian propaganda purposes.
Yeah, so, for Putin's ego, have to call it that.
Yeah, so he's not saying much because he says that the second he says publicly something about the Putin or the army or about the war, all his assets will be frozen. So if we just for a second imagine what would happen if there was no ruble, there was crypto instead of a ruble, it would mean that he would be just as free as I am, because for me to leave the country, all I had to take with me is my crypto, but it was already outside of Ukraine because crypto doesn't have borders. So my government has no influence on me at the moment at all. I'm abroad, I'm in Switzerland, and I have my crypto with me. All my assets are with me, well, apart from the house, which doesn't cost much, well, at all, probably, in Ukraine right now. So the government has influence. So I can say anything that I want about my government. With the centralized system like Russia, he cannot say anything because, you know, the same thing will happen to him as happened to the founder of the Tinkoff Bank. So he had to sell for like 2 or 3% of the value of his shares, his bank, because on Instagram he said that this is war and we should stop it immediately. That's it. That's the example of centralized regime. And I'm a good example of decentralized regime because all my assets are in crypto. They're in the web. There is nothing the government can do to me. So there is no censorship. And that's, you know, one of the examples of how you can answer whatever you just asked me.
If I'm going to ask you this question, and it might be horrible OPSEC for you to answer, but I'm asking anyway. You keep talking about how your assets are on the web. So you have a custodial wallet somewhere that someone else is holding your crypto for you.
Oh, no. No, we have our own custody solution. And then it's multi-sig, and there is not just one. There is like a couple, and they're geographically spread out, and there is like different protocols for every single wallet. And then there is different currencies which are stored differently. So, yeah, it's all taken. I told you, I'm in crypto since 2013. So
I saw all these. Well, you're a special case, right? But it's important to ask you, because I think if you're a regular Ukrainian citizen, it would seem tempting to move all your assets into crypto and then maybe sign up with Kuna Exchange, have Kuna Exchange hold your assets and then get out of the country, right? But like that's a level of risk that I would say is still very high for an average person.
Yeah, it is. But again, I'm the only founder of the exchange who tells my clients, guys, don't store your crypto with me because it's not your crypto. It's my crypto. You have the blessing by the God that Satoshi Nakamoto came up with the Bitcoin, and you can store your crypto on your wallet with your private key. So go and do it. And that's why I publish quite regularly, probably once a month or so. So I publish with the step-by-step tutorial how to set up a wallet on your phone, how to properly store your seed phrases, how to set up Trezor, Ledger, you know, how to create it on like different on a computer and run a full Bitcoin node. you know, how to use Electrum. So all that stuff that I'm you know, advocating for. And I think that's only the future, because in other case, you're just taking risk from the bank and giving to the other guy, which is kind of stupid. So don't trust any exchange, not even mine, guys. No, I'm centralized. So until we are DEX, and even if it's DEX, it's still there is some risk. So as the history shows us. So I think private keys is the only way forward. In that case, you're fully decentralized and you can tell pretty much any government, if it's not US, to go and, you know, I don't want to swear.
Now you can swear. On this show, you can swear, especially you in your situation. Swear away. Let me ask you, but so we, you know, we've made a lot of jokes about the, you know, 30 kilo bag of cash that you might have to have. That's very risky. Someone might come and get you. If you're
all it's heavy.
It's heavy, right? But that's like the smallest part of the risk. The smallest part of the risk is someone could come and take it from you. If you actually make the bag way lighter and you put all the crypto on your phone and then you're custodying it, your risk is still very high. Someone could come and hurt you and take your phone, and now they don't have to carry a heavy bag. They just got your phone. Like, how do you balance all those risks? Because to me, right, one of the big benefits of having a bank and a semi-functional American government is that there isn't any cash in my house. Right. And so, like, I don't think that anyone's going to come and try to take the cash out of my house, because there's none here. There's like $20 here.
Two answers. The first one with the self-custody. Well, first of all, never keep your crypto on the phone that you're using for the daily basis. Okay. That's one. It has to be a separate device. The mnemonic phrase has to be written down on like three pieces of paper. These three pieces of paper should be stored in a safe location, and in totally different geographic locations. So probably ideally it's even to have it on different continents. There is a lot of ways how you can do it, but obviously 99% of the people would never do that because they're lazy. Some of them are even stupid. So for them, there will be always a centralized agent that would help or do it for them. So that's the truth of a life. But at least for the smart people and cautious people and forward-thinking people, there is an alternative. A crypto on your wallet. On your wallet. Your crypto with your keys. That's the only way forward. But if you're lazy or you're willing to take that risk and you trust that guy or that service or I don't know where else, then it's your, it's your risk. At least it's your risk. You know, but you have an alternative.
This to me is the heart of the future of crypto in Ukraine or out of Ukraine, right? People choose banks because they don't want to hold all the money in their house. They choose music streaming services because they don't want to collect all the CDs at their house, right? People pick convenience and they outsource security pretty regularly when it comes to computers. And I think you're describing a system where the more we've spoken, the more it feels like the reason people value cryptocurrencies is because dollars are a useful currency. And then all of the benefits of having me totally decentralized get re-centralized by some actors sometimes. Even if you personally, you know, write a lot about how it should be totally decentralized and you should custody your own crypto, the services to the third-party custodians of crypto exist. They're growing businesses. So that's like, to me, is...
What's the question?
Well, I think as we come through this grand change in Ukraine and its relationship to crypto, and you're saying all the powerful people in that country are now with it, what is the actual change that has been accomplished other than some transactions go faster and we are reliant less on a bad banking system?
Well, for me, it's freedom, because I can't be free with a bank account, especially if I come from the, you know, developing countries, or actually in developed countries, it's also a risk. I mean, if you go crazy in your opposition to the U.S. government, they're most likely to impose sanctions on you and block your accounts and all your assets. And, you know, this is what, I mean, if we look at what happened with the Russians, yeah, it's a good example of how the centralized system can behave and how it can do pretty much to anyone in this world. I mean, Putin is a public figure. You know, all these sanction lists are public figures. But, you know, we totally understand that this is possible. You can block anyone's asset in pretty much any part of the world. And there is no other solution or alternative apart from crypto. I mean, for me, it's quite obvious, self-explanatory.
Yeah. I'm just curious. I think it's just a fascinating thing that is happening there with crypto. You've talked a lot about how the next generation of the government might work with crypto, how there might be a DAO that enhances or somehow supersedes the government. How do you think that would play out?
I have a different plan. So I'm a bit tired of a government this year. Could understand, yeah, with the National Bank as well. So
it hasn't come through. I have to say, Michael, your frustration with the National Bank has not been obvious over the last hour.
But I don't like them. I mean, it's a war and they're blocking the means by which we could sell Bitcoin for hryvnia. Anyway, so basically they're like blocking an account. It's not an account, but anyway, yes, it's a similar thing. So for the crypto exchanges in Ukraine now, because they're so scared, motherfuckers. But anyway, so I'm tired of trying to change someone in the government or the whole of the government. So my idea is, considering that so many people are in crypto right now, and I guess it's my guess that people who use crypto have crypto, or at least someone close to them use crypto,
or they know really well about crypto, is probably 10 million people in Ukraine right now out of 35 in total. So the third of a country definitely knows that crypto is something good and it's meaningful and you can use it and it's much better than any, you know, government or commercial bank alternative. So I would like to use this momentum and instead of rebuilding Ukraine once the war has finished, instead of rebuilding the old bad copy of democratic society of Europe or US, instead of copying the capitalism market, the bad copy of capitalism or ugly copy of the capitalist market of US, why don't we just propose a DAO Ukraine where, you know, there will be no president, there will be no prime minister. If I'll just, you know, paint the picture, it will be government similar to Switzerland. So it's confederation. So it's a lot of federations where there is no centralized body which take care of the whole country. It will be based on the blockchain instead of traditional centralized systems. You're going to have a digital currency without the national bank. You can use these currency or governance tokens to directly vote for some changes in your government, or you can delegate or stake these tokens to someone who you trust in a specific questions, and therefore we don't need parliament or senate or congress or any other elections. We don't need the president. We don't need the IRS or the tax service because we can implement smart contracts which would deduct automatically the taxes which will go to the local governments. Everything will be transparent. And the good news is the technology is here, so we can already do it. So this is the topic of my discussion for the past 3 months. And this is what I'm building right now. So I want to create the first crypto state. We're going to have the, you know, some kind of passports or ID of this crypto state. And it will be open to the crypto guys. It will be open to libertarian. And the way we're going to do it is we'll start rolling out so-called government, just for ease of understanding for over regular people, government digital government services, and with the these rollouts, more and more people will be coming on board of crypto. So as I said, now it's 10 million. Tomorrow it could be 20 million, and in a certain point of time in the future, we're gonna see that most of the services are already on a blockchain, and we have no need of a traditional government.
What's a service that you could put on a blockchain right now? The government service you can put on the blockchain.
The first service is taxing system. So we can implement smart contracts, which would automatically deduct 2% from any commercial transaction. So we can create wallets for the merchants, we can create wallets for the people, and it could be different wallets, so it could be rules of how the tax system works. So therefore, we can save a couple of billion of hryvnias on just the budget of the tax service. That's one. Second service, government service, is public money. So that's a blockchain. I mean, that's the easiest thing to do. The good news is we would be able, as a government or as a country, the first country, to evenly distribute tokens to every single citizen of Ukraine. And it would be mathematically verifiable that only the citizens received and that they did receive, because I have the public keys of pretty much everyone in the country. So
how would you prevent like a standard DAO governance attack in that moment, right? If you're the Russian government and you see Michael setting up crypto Ukraine and it's going to be a DAO, right? You would take the entire internet research agency, which right now attacks the United States by making Facebook memes, and you would convert it to, we're going to do a governance attack on the Ukraine DAO and somehow take over the Ukrainian government. And we see governance attacks on DAOs left and right. We're going to buy all the tokens and stake them all to Vladimir Putin. How would you prevent that?
Good question. I mean, I don't have answers to every single question, but the one thing that I'm doing, I'm proposing, I'm giving choice. Because there are no other alternatives, because the government, current government, they just want to, you know, rebuild everything that was destroyed, even the government system. And it's dead. It's useless. It showed that if not US or Europe, we would be already Russia. And a lot of millions of people would be probably dead already, because our government didn't, you know, prepare for the war, because it was so corrupt and it was so shit. So we have nothing to lose. And now we have, even physically, we have nothing to lose, because a lot of cities are just wiped out. So what's the point of rebuilding old if we can build new? That's my proposition. So I don't have the answer to every single question. And the purpose of my podcast today is to actually raise the awareness that it's possible in Ukraine. It's ideal place to do it, because so many people are involved and so many government officials, top government officials, are really pro crypto now. They have crypto as well. So we can do it. I mean, why not just try it? Do an experiment. I don't know whether it's going to be good or bad. What's the outcome of it? But at least we're giving a choice and we're trying. If we succeed, great. We can copy it to other countries. If we fail, at least we tried. That's my point. So if you want to join, just help us out. Let's do it. Let's do it together. The first crypto state. I mean, no government of opposition at the moment in Ukraine.
So one of my jokes on the show all the time is that like every DAO hits a fatal point when it tries to interact with reality.
Mm-hmm.
Right? DAOs are great when you're moving bits around a database.
Yep.
Because the smart contracts can execute and people can see it. And then when you have to take custody of a physical item, which many DAOs have tried to do, you realize, okay, like one guy has to have the painting, right? One guy has to go shovel the driveway. Like you have to, the DAO has to make somebody do something. And that's usually where they hit a pretty big crisis moment. How would your crypto state shovel the roads when it snows or fight fires? Like how would you, who would be in charge of making those things happen?
You probably didn't get me. So I'll repeat, but different words.
Yeah. Okay.
We are the first country in the world where crypto guys have enough power to take over the whole country. Is that clear?
That is clear.
That's what I'm saying. So with a little help, we can do it. It will be the first crypto state. Not that, well, not like what's happening in Salvador or what else they are doing. It. This is like crippled. Well, I'm just saying that we could be the first crypto state in a DAO. I mean, you can call it, don't call it DAO if you like have bad feelings for the DAO. I mean, call it something else. But
it's not that I have bad feelings for the DAO. It's that my history with covering DAOs is that when DAOs talk about bits, they do great. And when they talk about atoms, they tend to fall apart.
Yeah. So listen, we can do it. That's what I'm saying. There is no opposition. There is not any single, especially special forces or the guys with the guns. They're not going to be against us. They're with us.
That's what I'm saying. So that's unique, something unique in the world, because with my experience, 10 years and 1 month in crypto, when we try to approach any government ministry or national bank and say, let's do this on the blockchain, let's do this, let's get rid of this ministry or do that, there was always opposition from within the government, because this is the way the system resists, because any system tries to protect itself. And I'm saying that there is no system in Ukraine, and we have a lot of political power right now to create the first crypto state. And it doesn't matter which passport you hold right now. I don't care. I mean, if you're for the crypto, you're for Ukraine, welcome. Why not?
I believe you on all that, right? You've got the political capital, for lack of a better word. You've got the opportunity. Have you thought through the execution? That one day you will need to stand up police and fire and ambulances just to do the basics of government in a community?
There will be police. There will be, what else we need, fire service. There will be probably army. But I'm just saying that...
But what if the members of the DAO choose to take all the money away from the fire?
But that's stupid. Why?
I don't know. What would be the control to make sure that doesn't happen? Like, you wouldn't be the king of the country, so you can't just say that's stupid.
Okay, good point. But again, it would be decentralized. Who says there has to be one big DAO? It could be brought down to the level of a city, or it could be brought down to your area of a neighborhood. That's why I said Switzerland is a good example, because here everything is decentralized. So each city has its own citizen, and they all vote for like local changes, and it's up to them how they spend their budget and who they choose their mayor. So it will be still a mayor. There will be someone, but he will be chosen transparently. And anytime the vote can be taken away and we can choose new mayor, that's a problem that we have right now with the presidents and prime ministers. So they, you know, during the elections, they promise a lot of stuff and then nothing happens, and you don't have any means of, you know, take your vote back and choose the other guy. But with the blockchain, it's a staking. So you unstake your tokens and here we go. He's not the mayor. You choose a new one. It's how you find the consensus among your neighbors. So obviously, if you see that you live in a danger zone of massive fires, obviously you're going to use your budget on the safety first, and then you're going to spend it on the rest of the stuff. But it will be your money of your neighborhood, transparent, without anyone stealing the money, because you can see that what's going on. And there is no secrecy of how you spend your money. I mean, because we're not anything like Soviet Union where everything was secret, you know. So it's possible. So it's down to architecture. I'm saying I'm not the wisest guy in the world. I'm just saying that you have to understand that I'm not the wisest, definitely. But I'm just saying that there is a momentum and we have a political power. And now it's down to architecture. So now we need really smart guys in the world who know exactly how to implement, I don't know, whatever else we need in this so-called new government. I don't know. So I'll have to find all of these guys, or they'll find me, and then together we'll just create something new. We have this opportunity. Why not? Let's just use it.
That's very exciting. It's also a great place to end it. You've given us so much time. Michael Jermanian, thank you so much for coming on Decoder.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Michael Jermanian for taking the time to talk today, and thank you for listening to Decoder. I hope you enjoyed it. As always, I'd love to hear what you think of Decoder. You can email us at decoder@theverge.com. You can tweet at me directly. I'm @reckless on Twitter. If you like the show, please share it with your friends and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you really like it, hit us with that 5-star review. And as many of you have noticed, if you tweet at me about the show, I will almost certainly retweet you. Decoder is a production of The Verge and part of the Vox Media Podcast Network. Today's episode was produced by Creighton D. Simone and Jackie McDermott. Research was done by Liz Leon. It was edited by Callie Wright. The Decoder music is by Breakmaster Cylinder. Our senior audio director is Andrew Marino. Our executive producer is Eleanor Donovan. We'll see you next time.